Monies are mickle, Max are muckle. Monies are mickle, Max are muckle. Or so my father used to say when we were out walking and he'd pick up a penny from the street. In his old Aberdeen accent, he'd reach down, he'd pick up the penny, he'd shine it on his cuff, he'd stick it in his pocket, and he would say to me, "Remember, boy, monies are mickle, Max are muckle." It's an old Scottish expression, meaning that a lot of little things are mickles. When put together, make a big thing, a muckle. You know, I feel really sorry for the poor Stogners who, having come here from the United States, have had to learn almost a whole new language since they've been here. And just to complicate things further, I'd love to hear Wendy Stogner saying, "Monies a mickle, Max a money," 10 times, really fast. Well, let's bring it back to Glasgow City Free Church. Many of us give relative mickles, little things. Many of us give relative muckles, big things. But the question that we have to ask is this. When it comes to God's perspective on our financial giving, what is a mickle and what is a muckle? What is a little and what constitutes a lot? Perhaps in the eyes of God, it's not what we give, whether mickle or muckle, that's important. It's what we've got left after we've given. Well, the story of the poor widow's mite in Mark 12, 41, 44, it's just that. It's a story. It's not a parable with a made-up cast. It is a real-life story where Jesus comments on the vast givings of the rich compared to the tiny giving of a poor widow woman. And the message of tonight's sermon is this. God can take our mickles and make muckles out of them. Or perhaps even more pointedly, in God's eyes, our mickles are his muckles. When in faith we give all we can, even though it should not be much compared to some others, Christ sees and takes pleasure in it all. Well, during this lockdown, our congregational leadership have had an opportunity to reflect upon our future, and in particular, on the ministries in which we as Glasgow City Free Church want to invest. The strapline of our vision remains an equipping church, in that our goal is to equip you to be the best Christians you can be at home, in the workplace, in school, in university, wherever you are. And to do that, we've highlighted different areas in which we want to invest. So we're praying for and working toward a new resource centre, a new building where we can more effectively engage in mission. But we do not want to exhaust our financial resources on a building. We don't need to prove anything by getting a big building. Because after all, the church is people, not bricks and mortar. Rather, we want to spend and be spent in other, more profitable areas. So over the next few weeks, you're going to hear of our commitment as Glasgow City Free Church to providing a training environment for prospective ministers, what's called in the Free Church a minister in training program. You'll hear about that next Sunday evening, as our American friends would call it, an internship program. You're also going to hear of our challenge to young men to pursue the full-time ministry of the word. You're going to hear about that in two Sunday evenings' time. You're also going to hear that we're more committed than ever to local and overseas mission. Likewise, we're going to renew our commitment to our covenant children. As well as all these things, over the next three Sunday mornings, led by Phil Stogner, who is our resident expert on church planting, you're going to hear of our determination as Glasgow City Free Church to plant new churches among new people in new areas of Glasgow. But let's be clear about this. In order to pursue these ambitious plans, we need both your mickles and your muckles. We need your pennies and your pounds, your mites and your monies. but perhaps not in the way you think, and certainly not according to our perspectives on giving. Rather, in terms of God's perspective. For some of us, our mickles really are muckles because they're all we can give. For others of us, our muckles are mickles because if we really did want to invest in the future of Glasgow City Free Church, we could be giving so much more than we presently are. Now, don't get me wrong. As with this morning, this is not a hard sell sermon. It's not a health and wealth Ponzi scheme set up to get you healthy and wealthy. I am no slick tele-evangelist trying to fleece you. I don't have good enough suits, nor do I have shiny enough teeth. Rather, it is an honest assessment of what happens when we selflessly give to the work of the gospel. Let's consider this passage in Mark 12 in three stages, why we give, what we give, and how we give. Why we give, what we give, how we give. I'm going to leave the fine details of our finances to the finance group, who, after I've spoken, will lead us through their proposals and their findings. But the main takeaway from this service this evening is this: be honest with yourself. Are you giving a mickle or a muckle? Why is that? First of all, then, why we give? Why we give? In verse 41, we read, "And he," that's Jesus, "sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box." Now, we may be secretive about our giving, and rightly so. We should be secretive about our giving. But we cannot keep secrets from Jesus because he sees how, to whom, and how much we give. And in the first instance, Jesus sees rich people coming forward and placing large contributions into the offering box. Jesus could tell that they were giving gold. He says of them in verse 44, they all contributed out of their abundance. They were rich. They were abundantly wealthy. So they gave out of that wealth. They had really deep pockets. But let's ask the question, why were they giving? Why were they giving? It is no coincidence that Mark 12, 41 through 44 follows immediately on from a passage of scripture where Jesus is condemning the scribes. He says of them in verses 38 through 40, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and like greetings in the marketplaces and have the best seats in the synagogue and the places of honor at the feasts, who devour widows' houses and for a pretense make long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." It seems likely that these rich people who Jesus saw depositing their large sums into the offering boxes were scribes. We know from Jewish history that they tended to be very rich individuals. And from what Jesus says in verse 40, they seem to have become wealthy by devouring widows' houses. Or in other words, they became rich off the back of the poor. So this is blood money being given, and blood money is never and never will be acceptable to God. Money gained from unethical sources, which involve taking advantage of the poor. But the point is still relevant. Why are they giving? Jesus answers in verse 40 in the context of their prayers. For a pretense. For a pretense. They're giving in order to be seen to be giving. You know, I use the mobile fitness app Strava, which records all your fitness activities and lets all your friends see what you've been doing. The biggest buzz on Strava is when one of your friends gives you kudos. So you've done a long run and your friends give you kudos to tell you how impressed they are with you. It makes you feel good to get all these kudoses from all your friends. The scribes had Strava on their wallets. They gave to get kudos from others. The reason why these rich people were giving was so that the people watching on would give them kudos. They were giving in order to be seen to be giving. And that's a real danger for us as Christians. Not that we give so that others can see what we give and give us kudos, but for an altogether more sinister reason. that we give so that we can give ourselves kudos. To give in order to tell ourselves how impressed we are with ourselves and our generosity. And that, you know, is the giving motive of the legalist. A giving motive which will always give out of its abundance, but as far as God is concerned, all the muckles are mickles because he's not impressed if the motive is wrong. It's all a pretense. But in the second instance, Jesus sees a poor widow coming forward. Not only is she a widow, but the text expressly tells us she's a poor widow. You can see it by the clothes she wears and by the general demeanour of her face. As a widow living in a society without a social security system, she has no way to provide for herself. And so widows, by and large, were the poorest in society. But this widow was extra poor. She didn't have the long flowing robes of the scribes, and to all intents and purposes, she is a nobody. And what she gave was tiny compared to what the scribes had given. She gave two small copper coins, which when put together make a penny. Now, most of you are too young, thankfully, to remember half penny coins. Well, that's what she put into the offering plate, two half penny coins, tiny pieces of copper. Perhaps the rest of her possessions, perhaps the reason she was poor is because the scribes and their friends had stolen all her wealth. That's all she had to give. Two copper coins, but she gave it anyway, a mickle compared to their muckles. But why was she giving? Listen to what Jesus says. He says she has given everything she had, all she had to live on. Well, if she's got nothing left to live on, where does she expect her next meal to come from? That's the question. If she's got nothing left to live on, where is her next meal going to come from? Jesus' inference is clear. This is a woman who is living day to day by faith in God. She has not got a back pocket Strava for others to give her kudos. Rather, she is not motivated by feel good, but faith. She knows that God's going to take care of her, even if all her mickles are gone. Her faith is moving her hand to give. And even though she's giving really rather little, Jesus says of her, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box." She's motivated by faith and she's giving to God. And that is truly remarkable, that our faith in Christ should move us to give in this way. The world around us will never understand why we are giving so much away to God. But then the world around us does not know Jesus and does not have faith in Jesus. They have not seen Jesus dying on the cross and rising from the dead. They haven't experienced for themselves the joy of seeing God provide for them on a day-to-day basis. They're living by sight, whereas we as Christians are living by faith in the God who supplies all our needs, pennies or no pennies. So the lesson is clear. If you're motivated by faith in Christ to give, then if it's a mickle, if it's just a little bit, it's a muckle to God, it's a lot. But if you're motivated by a back pocket Strava to give, then though it might be a muckle, a really large sum, it's a mickle to God. Why we give, the first pillar of our giving. Our giving is to be motivated by the grace of Christ in the gospel through faith. Second, what we give. What we give. Well, according to Jesus in verse 41, who was carefully watching the whole scene in front of him, many of the rich people were putting large sums into the offering box. Yes, and by contrast, this poor widow places two half pennies, a grand total of one pence. Try claim gift aid on that one, Donald. The scribes put in their pounds and she put in her penny. And yet Jesus says of her, truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. How does that work? I can already see the mathematicians among us scratching their heads, and the finance group are obviously worried about where I'm going with this. Because what Jesus is saying is that he would rather have a poor widow in his church giving one pence than a rich scribe in his church giving £1 million. It seems for all the world to make no sense at all, right? Should we all, as a result of what Jesus says here, dial down our giving and start giving mickles rather than muckles, start giving pennies rather than pounds? Well, of course not. I'm saying no because we're not asking Jesus the right question here. He is answering a different question from the one we're tempted to ask him. You see, we're thinking of giving to the church. Let's face it. We're thinking of giving to the church in terms of this question. How much should I give? How much should I give? That's the way the rich people were thinking. How much should I give? Do you notice that whereas Jesus specifies what this woman gave, two small copper coins, he doesn't specify what the rich people gave. He just says they put in large sums because they were thinking in terms of what they should give. That is the mindset of the legalist. Limit oneself by propriety, what one should give. Don't dare do anything reckless. Do the minimum of what I should give. That's enough. I find this passage deeply challenging, and it's with great trepidation I try to interpret it according to Jesus' own agenda here. You see, this poor widow did not ask the question, how much should I give? She asked an altogether different question. She asked the question, how much can I give? How much can I give? And she discovered that though she had next to nothing left after it all, because of her faith in God, she gave it all up, two small copper coins. She went way beyond the point of propriety, and in the eyes of the world anyway, was totally reckless. Of course, through the eyes of faith, she wasn't reckless at all, because the God in whom she had placed her trust would care for her. But she gave all she could, not all she should. This passage is not about poor people versus rich people and dialing back on our giving. It is about ramping up our giving by stopping asking the question, how much should I give? A question largely motivated by the mentality of keeping up appearances to oneself and by giving oneself kudos, and beginning to ask the question, how much can I give? A question which is motivated, a liberating question motivated by the grace of Christ and gratitude for the gospel. If we soberly ask ourselves the question, how much can I give? The answer will always be exponentially higher than, how much should I give? And again, this isn't a story designed to shame rich people into giving more or poor people into giving less. It's a story designed to show how the grace of the gospel so transforms us so that what is given in faith, though it may be relatively small in comparison to other donations, really is a muckle. It's a lot to God. One thing is sure. If we're to realize our vision as Glasgow City Free Church, we need everyone, with the elders and the deacons showing practical leadership by example here, to ask themselves the question, not how much should I give, but how much can I give? Don't shoot the messenger for the message. Why don't we try giving recklessly, beyond the point of propriety even? What we give. And then lastly, how we give. Why we give? Faith. What we give? As much as we can. How we give. Now, I want to say right now, I am not privy. Donald said this this morning. I'm saying it again. I am not privy, nor is any office bearer in this congregation privy to information detailing what each person and family in this congregation gives. I have no right to know these things. I don't want to know these things. Only Laura knows these things. And if I was ever foolish enough to ask her, she is far too discreet and professional to divulge anything to me. She'd probably slap me if I tried. Because what we give is a matter between ourselves and God. And I'm not at all involved. But as we close, I want to draw your attention to something fascinating. As I said this morning, the first minister of the Milton side of our congregation was the famous John Rabbi Duncan from Aberdeen. During a mission trip to Budapest, Rabbi Duncan met with a Jewish leader called Alfred Edersheim. Edersheim, through Duncan's witness, became a believer in Christ and proceeded to write many books detailing helping Christians to understand how the buildings and the rituals and the laws of the Old Testament relate to us as Christians. And in particular, he wrote a book called, holding it up here, The Temple, Its Ministry and Services as They Were at the Time of Christ. He also wrote another book called The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah. But it's this book I want to refer to this evening. Alfred Edersheim helps us to understand how we may give to the work of the gospel. Bear in mind the direct link between us and him. Rabbi John Duncan, first minister of the Milton side of our congregation, Alfred Edersheim. So don't think I'm importing something new or alien into the life of Glasgow City. I'm not. I'm going back to roots. Well, on page 48 of my edition of Edersheim's Temple, he describes a courtyard in the temple in Jerusalem called the Court of the Woman. This is where Jesus was sitting when he observed the rich giving large sums and the poor widow giving her pennies. The Court of the Woman was surrounded by a wall in which there were placed 13 offering holes, behind each of which was a chest. The idea was that you could place your offering in any one of the holes in the wall, and it would go into an offering chest. And the hole itself was shaped rather like a trumpet. It was into one of these 13 holes or trumpets this poor widow woman gave her 2 halfpennies, and Jesus saw her doing it. The thing is that these 13 trumpets all led to offering chests, which were used for different purposes in the temple. In other words, all the money from the 13 wasn't clubbed together and then divvied out, as it were, among the different organizations in the temple. Rather, worshippers had their opportunity to put their offering into whatever chest they wished to be used for a chosen purpose. Let me run through what these 13 chests were. Remember, this is coming from Alfred Edersheim, John Rabbi Duncan, first minister of Milton. Chests 1 and 2 were for the yearly half shekel temple tax. Chests 3 and 4 were for the monetary equivalent for the offering of a dove or a pigeon. So Mary and Joseph, the mother and father of our Lord, would have put money into chests 3 or 4 when he was taken to the temple. Chest 5 was devoted for the wooden furniture and the interior of the temple. Chest 6 was for offerings used for incense during sacrifices. Chest 7 was offerings for the golden vessels in the temple. Chest 8 was for any money left over after the purchase of a sin offering, a sheep or a goat. Chests 9 through 13 were for money left over after the purchase of a trespass offering, a bird offering, a Nazarite offering, a cleansed leper, and for any voluntary contributions. So, suppose the gold of the temple was really important to a particular worshipper. He'd put his money into chest 7. He'd go and find the trumpet for chest 7, put his money in there. Supposing he wants to pay his temple tax, half shekel, He puts it into chests one or two. The point is that these different chests or trumpets or collection boxes in the temple were devoted to different purposes. We don't know into what chest this poor widow woman put her two wee half pennies, but we do know it was one of them. And she had the right to say which one it was. After the sermon, the finance group are going to detail how we're going to follow the pattern set down in the temple of different offerings designated for different purposes. They're going to detail which each of these offering purposes are, but they're going to include local mission, overseas mission, building, etc. Because we want to introduce personal discretion into the whole system of offerings, of offering our mickles and muckles to the Lord, recognizing that we live in days of unprecedented opportunity, new enthusiasm, and fresh vision in Glasgow City Free Church. We're on the cusp of purchasing a new building. One of our funds is designated for that. We're investing in a minister in training internship. One of our funds is designated to that and for other aspects of local mission, including youth work, local evangelism, church planting. One of our funds is going to pay the administrator who fulfills that to which God has called her in serving him and us in our fellowship so professionally and so wonderfully and so lovingly. One of our funds will be designated to overseas mission, covering our offerings to Katrina and to many others. And all the time, we're going to keep supporting the wider work of the Free Church of Scotland. We have godly ambitions, I trust. So we need all these different funds to work together. I don't want to steal the finance group thunders, so I'm going to be quiet in a minute. And after we've sung the hymn, Donald can speak. My role in all of this is to set before you the Bible's teaching about mickles, muckles, and the gospel. The strap line is clear. Whether it's mickles or muckles you're giving, give it cheerfully, not motivated by shame, guilt, or by kudos, but purely out of a sense of gratitude for the grace of Christ. Let it be an offering driven by faith. And secondly, whether it's muckles or mickles that you're giving, don't ask the question, how much should I give? But as you process all I've said, ask yourself the question, how much can I give? Wouldn't it really be something if when Jesus notices how much you give, and perhaps even more importantly, why you're giving it, he says, truly, she put in far more than all of those.
Okay, I'll try and move through pretty quickly just the content that we covered this morning, you know, accepting that we've got quite a few different folk just on the call tonight. So back in September 2018 at a GCFC leadership away day, it was unanimously decided at that point that our future wasn't actually in our current St. Vincent Street building. And in fact, it was actually a distraction to the vision of the congregation. We had a really good attempt at securing the Townhead building probably about 18, 24 months ago, but probably most of us know that wasn't to be, but we did learn quite a lot from that. Just as a quick reminder, our vision as a congregation is really to be an equipping church, and as Colin's mentioned a number of times over the last few weeks, that analogy of us needing a new, much more sustainable fishing boat so that we can really focus our mission to the city from a more attractive and suitable location. So hopefully everybody this week received a copy of the Funding Our Future document. If you didn't, if you can reach out to Laura and she'll get one out to you straight away. We are probably going to make sure it comes around everybody this week, just in a soft copy in the regular weekly email. And that sets out the goals, our current financial position as a congregation, hopefully relatively simply. But we're really happy to take any questions, accepting everybody's understanding of the finances is quite different. So hopefully in there you can see really clear reference to the pots and chests that Colin talked about tonight. And I wanted to just focus a little bit more on them tonight than I did this morning, just so you everybody understands the specifics of these. So if you've got the document in front of you just now, between pages 7 and 9 of that, we actually work through the pots. Now, we've put in some approximations of just how we anticipate the money will be spent or allocated, rather. We're proud to be part of a Presbyterian denomination, and it's really important that the strong support the weak. So we want to be able to continue to support the work of the overall denomination. So about 50% of your remittances will go to cover the daily running costs of the congregation and support of our head office remittances that pays salaries and, you know, the mission work of the church overall. Then, we're really trying to simplify a lot of our funds. Hopefully you're going to see this in the accounts this year and really give them the name that aligns to the purpose. So 10% of your donations will then go to our local ministry fund that supports things like our youth workers, the ministry and training programme that Colin talked about tonight that will start shortly. And really keen that we have these programmes, and, you know, having a building that's much more suitable will help us really focus our efforts much more on mission rather than on maintaining a historic property. 10% will then go to the missionary causes that we support as a congregation. So that's things like Katrina and the work that she's involved with, Adam and his work, the Langham Partnership, and these causes that the Kirk Session changes from time to time, but that we foster a real partnership with. 10% will go to funding Laura's role. And, you know, where would we be without Laura? It's probably the ultimate rhetorical question for most of us who are leaders in the congregation. So Laura really provides a brilliant support role for us in keeping us all right and organising so much of what goes on in behind the scenes. We want to put that in a much more sustainable footing. 10% of your givings would then go towards the building fund. So that's the loan element that we will have to pay off back to the Free Church, and that we hope to get a loan from then. And then finally, 10% will go towards a fabric fund, effectively maintaining whatever we buy. So covering the insurance and the running costs of that new building. So if my maths right, I think that adds up to about 100%. That they will have to flex, because we are really keen that we, you know, definitely support the central cause of the church. But really, we see ourselves hopefully as a growing congregation, and very keen that we put the funding and the investment of our own congregation on a much more solid footing, so that we can grow that in a sustainable way and then support the wider denomination at large. So as a leadership group, we would encourage everybody to allocate their givings in that way. That's effectively what Laura will do moving forwards, unless she hears to the contrary from anybody. So just quickly, you know, how can you maximise your givings? As I said this morning, it's really important that for anybody who pays tax, that they make that simple gesture of actually signing up for gift aid. It is literally as simple as signing a form that Laura can get you. There's more details of that on page 10. But that gift aid refund to the congregation last year meant £28,000. So that was £28,000 we got back from the government just for individuals in the congregation of having signed money. You can also give through using payroll giving if your employer runs that. And I think most employers do now. And then, you know, I'm sure virtually all of us probably buy stuff off Amazon, et cetera. So there's also the easy fundraising route that we refer to on page 11 of the document. But if you've got any questions on this, Laura's running 3 Zoom sessions this week at different times. You can see the details on page 11 of the document. Tomorrow from 5 till 6 o'clock, Wednesday from 3 till 4 o'clock, and then Friday from 10 till 11. Just the normal drop-in details. or call Laura directly on the new church number. She'll be really happy to help you out. And as Colin said earlier, that's with absolute discretion. So what do we need? We're looking to probably purchase a building around about at a cost of £650,000. We believe there are hopefully some buildings in the market at that kind of level. We're starting to see some come on. There was a really interesting one this week, but we just, that one had moved quite quickly. But we're really ramping up the effort there. And, you know, we are really keen to get this fundraising effort off to a big start and, you know, hopefully fill the gap between about the £500,000 that we've got. We're going to get a loan of about £150,000 from the Free Church. So that leaves us with this gap of £300,000. We're really keen to see if we can quickly fill that gap, as quickly as possible, to give us confidence going forward with the project. And, you know, we do commit to really communicating, you know, that progress on the fundraising with you really regularly. So I think two things finally from my perspective. You know, I think if you go to the back of the document, we've put in that really simple checklist. And, you know, as Colin said at the end of the service tonight, I think we've got a really personal challenge to each one of us, that, you know, how much can we give towards this cause? I think as a leadership group, we're really excited about the potential here. And we've talked about this for so long, and we believe that now is the time to move forwards with this. And then finally, just a word of thanks to Laura, who's put a pile of work into the document, the leaflet we've put around this week and the distribution of that. We were really keen to do it in hard copy, just to give you some chance to read it and to, you know, understand it and hopefully assimilate it a bit more easily than just looking at it electronically. And, you know, to Colin and anticipation to Phil for the preaching that we're going to get over the rest of this month, and really setting this up and, you know, looking forward to the future of the congregation and, you know, the mission that we hope to do from this new property. So I'll hand back to Colin now.